Hi, welcome to the Big Commerce Podcast.
Welcome back to season two, the Big Commerce Podcast. My name is Dozier. I am the marketing manager at Kalashaw Commerce, and I'm joined by Luigi, who's the founder / CEO. And today we'll be talking about e-commerce trends in 2022. So without any further ado, what is the state of e-commerce in 2022?
Hi, Dozier. Thanks for the introduction. So we've identified, you only have to kind of go online, I guess, and just Google it, and you'll have a list of different states of play and different importances. But I think there's certainly four or five that overlap and are fundamental to e-commerce in 2022. And then maybe four that I believe anyway, or we believe, are quite strong in the requirement of an e-commerce website. So the first one is, which is an obvious one, and COVID really kind of brought that to the forefront. And it was coming anyway. Everyone kind of is saying that COVID just accelerated the inevitable. But kind of X-commerce is here and is here to stay. So that encompasses, it basically creates a unified experience, whether it's online, offline, through an app, Meta, if we're talking about it from that perspective. So basically being omnipresent. Customers kind of want one unified experience, don't they? Kind of, you know, when you go to a shop and you, or maybe you buy online rather, and it, the product doesn't fit or it's not fit for purpose, sometimes it's easier to try and drop it off at a shop that you know is near you. So those are the kind of things that merchants need to take into consideration. So you need to make sure that your customer can have one unified experience, whether they've bought online or they've bought in store, it doesn't matter. They want to be able to make the most, whatever's most convenient for them. So I was in Sweaty Betty a few weeks ago with my wife. The person in front of us in the queue had bought something online. It didn't fit her, so she wanted to exchange it, and they exchanged it there and then. And that's really what you need to do, because her relationship was with Sweaty Betty. They're not a client of ours, I'm just using them as an example, but this customer's relationship was with Sweaty Betty, and to her it didn't matter that she'd bought it on the website. What she wanted to do was go to Sweaty Betty and have Sweaty Betty exchange it for them. So that's really important. So buying online and having it delivered, buying online or picking up in store, which has an added benefit as well in terms of convenience, because you know that you don't have to potentially risk, especially in the days where supply chains are under pressure, risk the fact that you're going to go to a shop with the expectation of being able to buy something and actually find that they're out of stock. So you've wasted a journey. So being able to buy online, reserve it, pick up in store is a good way of kind of creating customer loyalty. Those are the things that you need to work on as a merchant, because also it gives you an advantage on pure online merchants. If you're saying, look, you know, we're everywhere. You can buy online, you can buy in the store, you can return it to our central warehouse, you return it to a store, you can exchange it. We make life easy for you, put you, the customer, first and foremost, then that's really going to win you some fans. From a merchant's perspective, what that also means is that you're able to create a single customer profile. So rather than having a fragmented customer profile, so information, data on me and the website, the kind of the online data that you've got on me, so what I've bought, when, how much time I spent on the website, you've also got within that same customer profile information on which stores I've bought, how much I've bought offline, what my returns rate is offline as well. So by having a single unified customer profile, you can understand your customer better and market to them more effectively, which hopefully will give you a higher ROI and a longer lifetime value. It's never been easier to have so much data on your customer. Now, fine, we're coming into an age where you've got privacy controls through iOS, third-party cookies being, you know, so it is becoming more difficult in some respects to understand your customer or build up a picture of the customer, but it's never been easier to collate all the other data and actually put that into work. So you can, you can aggregate your data into things like Google Data Studio, into something like Big Data, Tableau, and start to actually measure your KPIs, the effectiveness of all your campaigns, of any changes, A/B testing you make, understand user behavior as well. So you can start segmenting customers and maybe correlating them to returns or to purchases or to how they buy or where they buy. And most tech platforms that you would integrate with your website will give you access to some form of analytics and data. The next then step is to aggregate that, so connect that all to, because what you don't want to do is have five or six different places that you've got to log in and get data. You want to have one unified customer profile, one unified data profile on the effectiveness of your website.
What kind of data platforms would that be?
So like I said, Google Data Studio is a good one. It integrates with pretty much, well, most platforms will integrate with most platforms anyway through an API. But if you also look at the integrations that are available, make it easier for the less tech-savvy merchants. So, and it also comes down to cost. So Google Data Studio is good because it's really cost-effective as well. You look at something like Tableau, which probably has, you know, a lot more functionality, but comes with a price tag on it as well. Obviously, you can go and use Google's, you know, Google Sheets and Microsoft Excel, but I wouldn't really recommend that.
But, yeah. Okay. And how does this play into the effectiveness or difficulty with advertising?
So advertising is becoming a lot more difficult and expensive to manage because there are a lot more e-commerce websites than there was 2 years ago. We're seeing merchants fighting for the same customer. So it's obviously a lot more competitive market. A lot of people are advertising. And so really, it's not necessarily about the budgets, it's the effectiveness of that. And how do you manage a campaign effectively? How do you make sure it's targeted towards the right target customer? Is data, is understanding what your customers are doing, where they're buying from, what they're buying, what they're interested in. Those are the things that you need to know. Obviously, you know, merchants will have their own internal KPIs and data points that they want to understand. But that is fundamentally one of them. The second one, by being able to understand your customer, you can then look at where is most efficient, effective to advertise. So it's not, I mean, Google advertising, Google Ads is, I think, the first port of call for most people. But it may not be the best. If you niche down into your industry, into your target customer, and you'll find that maybe it's a social media platform or network. It's maybe it's an app. It's not all kind of, you don't have to advertise everywhere. Just, I think, you know, you've got to advertise at where your target customer is most likely to be looking and most likely to convert. Don't be a generalist. Really kind of niche down and get rid of those broad terms and just, you know, focus on the customers that really have got most likelihood of being qualified at the end of the day and likely to convert, because your cost of acquisition otherwise is going to go through the roof.
Interesting. And we've also seen the resurgence of SMS and mobile. Can you speak on that?
So we're all spending more time on mobile phones. Data says that every customer, every prospect that we come across has most visits on a mobile, whether they're B2B or B2C. We're spending more time on mobile phones, so it's only natural that we're going to be spending, you know, the most effective way rather to be marketed to is through SMS. So we seem to have gone back to like 2002, where we're getting kind of text messages. It's important, obviously, to adhere to the local laws and make sure that you've got the consent. But the benefit of SMS is that we tend to open them within 3 minutes of receiving it. And the click, the open rates are much, much higher. So whereas on email in 2002, maybe the open rate was 80%, we're now looking at open rates of, you know, single digits. And that's when you need to obviously go into segment and so on and so forth. But SMS marketing, there are a lot of platforms out there like Klaviyo, like Justdoodle, who will provide the platform in order to market through SMS. You can use it for, obviously, order updates. You can use it for marketing. You can use it for things like in-stock alerts. So it's a great way of getting right in front of your customer. And I'm quite precious about my phone. You know, I think we all are. It's quite an emotive thing, that, or quite an intimate thing, that actually, when we let somebody into our mobile phone, what we're doing is we're showing trust to that brand. So that's fine. I'll let you market to me through my mobile phone. So that's another piece of data that you can actually understand. We're saying, right, the person that's likely to, or is happy to receive SMS messages from us has a stronger bond emotively than maybe somebody who isn't. So that then allows you to kind of say, right, maybe we need to focus on this, you know, customer through some, you know, some slightly different targeted advertising and marketing.
Great. And so in terms of customers and customer service, what is the approach in 2022?
Well, you certainly need to offer your customers customer service. So I've already touched briefly on supply chain issues. And I'm sure things obviously have got better, but we've all had kind of slight delays with stuff that we've ordered online.
Definitely.
So the most important thing is communication. SMS can help you there, because with platforms, customer service, I mean, we're big fans of Gorgeous. They also allow you to automate some customer service tasks. So through kind of a tagger system, the system can understand if somebody's chasing their shipment, and you can then automate the response of pulling in dynamic information such as tracking details and so on. So again, going back to kind of SMS, we get the text messages from our couriers. That's a really good way of making sure that they're kept up. Because if you send me an email, I might not read it till tonight, but if you send me an SMS within 3 minutes, I've on average read that message. The other thing is that it's really important that you look after your clients, because you've spent money and time acquiring them. I mean, you run the advertising for Calishock, you know how expensive it can be.
Yeah.
So why wouldn't you want to look after your clients once you've actually got them to, you know, the buy-in from them, they've purchased from you? I mean, imagine it's cost you £25 to acquire that customer. That one order has cost you £25 to acquire, to have. If that customer then gives you 10 orders in total, that cost of acquisition per order has gone down to £2.50. So why wouldn't you want to increase the lifetime value? Why wouldn't you want to continually market them and look after that customer through good customer services? And the majority of people are quite patient and will understand if there's a genuine mistake. Or if someone comes up and says, look, we just slow, you know, we dropped the ball. I think as long as you can explain to that, you know, that 0.001% of people will always, you know, find a reason to complain. But most people will be happy to kind of, you know, get an apology and maybe some form of conversation. But customer service, I cannot stress enough, is the most important piece of the after sales puzzle. Look after your customers, because they will keep coming back, and they, once they become clients of yours, your cost of acquisition just falls.
Great. And with personalization, what is also the trend? What is the focus of personalization?
So personalization is all about making things easy for customers. So convenience is something as well that we've touched on in our discussions before. And we only have to look at Amazon, how convenient they make it for us to buy. But it's, if we look at personalization, there's two aspects. There's one is the pre-sales and one is kind of, well, I guess they're both pre-sales. One is kind of the marketing side and one is the on-site side. So personalization is, you know, sending out targeted emails, you know, hey, Dozier, save 15%. You know, we'll save, Luigi, save 10% this weekend. Those emails should be personalized to me, targeted to me. You know, as a, if you've got this data profile, the customer profile that we've touched on, then you will understand what I'm interested in, when I'm more likely to open emails, and so on and so forth. And if I recognize my name, I know that that email is for me. Although I know it's automated, I know it's been targeted for me. The next one is around on-site personalization. If I'm on a website that sells clothes for men and women, and I am looking at trousers, jeans maybe, or Levi's brands, there are platforms out there that will understand that and won't then show me ladies' shoes or kids' pajamas. If you're able to show me through, you know, some form of algorithm or AI or machine learning, that you understand what I'm looking for, Amazon, again, let's touch on that one. Your Amazon homepage is going to be different than mine, because Amazon knows what you're likely to buy. So personalization around the, you know, there are platforms like Klaviyo, like Nosto, like Segmentify, that will help you. Now, they come with a cost, obviously, but it's an investment, because it will make the experience more tailored to the customer, make it easier for them to find the products they buy. So the kind of the uplift, the increased conversion as well, that maybe the higher order value, average order value as well. And that's really important, because what you don't want to do is have your customers having to search constantly for or being shown products that aren't related at all, because you didn't invest time in curating the experience. So personalization, we're seeing a lot of requests at the moment with personalization platforms, because the goal has to be get a customer on your website, put the products they're interested in front of them, get them to add it to the cart and check out as quickly as possible. You start putting in friction and distractions and obstacles, and you can forget that sale.
Okay. And what are your thoughts on subscriptions?
Subscriptions, again, it goes down to convenience. I mean, I know from a merchant perspective, you can talk about, well, you know, it guarantees me some monthly recurring revenue. But the flip side, because there's always a flip side, is you're making life easier for your customer. They haven't got to remember to reorder their supplements or vitamins or their hair products or socks. I think there's a website that sells socks on subscriptions as well. And we all have subscriptions. I mean, kind of, you know, what subscription? How many subscriptions have you got at the moment?
You know, 5, 6,
yeah,
maybe.
So the average is 7 from Recharge's report. We have on average 7 subscriptions. Netflix, iTunes and Spotify, Disney, then maybe some supplements, maybe some hair products, maybe some, you know, food. 7 is magic number. So there's flowers. You know, my wife has flowers on subscription. It's just, it's really, you know, we don't need to worry about going to the supermarket and finding a big bunch of flowers that, you know, maybe light, you know, lightens up the living room. They come every Thursday. So B2B and B2C merchants can start thinking, what can I offer subscription wise to my customers? That, fine, you may sell shelving and you can't do that on subscription, but if you sell janitorial supplies, toilet paper, cleaners, kitchen roll, foil, that can go on subscription. And as long as you make it easy for your customers to then pause or edit their subscriptions or even cancel, then you're set up, because if they don't have trust and confidence in how easy it's going to be to manage it, then that's when they won't sign up. But subscriptions are a great way of increasing monthly recurring revenue. And I said every merchant should be evaluating whether it's to see which products in their portfolio can be. But it's also important you incentivize. You know, you obviously see that if you buy once, you pay the full price. If you get it on a subscription, 5% off or free delivery or whatever it is. And we'll let you into a little secret about how to manage subscriptions, but that'll be for a future episode.
Okay. And on a final note, we've seen that there's been a rise in social commerce. So can you share more on that?
Yeah, I mean, social commerce is just the hotbed at the moment with just so much happening. And it really, everyone's looking at China. So I think you're familiar with some platforms on social media.
Yeah, Weibo, Little Red Book, they are huge platforms over there in China.
Yeah. They're just, I think that, you know, these platforms are trying to become the single point of use for the, you know, for customers. And look at China, you're buying stuff through social media, but like on a massive scale, you're paying for stuff with this, so, you know. So Facebook, you know, Meta and other social media platforms are trying to do the same. But again, it goes down to convenience, that if you're advertising on social media platforms, whether it's paid search or whether it's just organic, paid social or organic social, if they see a product they buy, don't make them have to then Google it or go onto your website outside the browser. There's so many ways that you can integrate the post with your e-commerce platform that allows them to buy from the post. So just kind of focus on that convenience. But where else are you going to get a marketing channel that allows you so much access to customers? I mean, yes, it comes with a cost, but it's a marketing cost. And I think even B2B can be using that, quite frankly. I mean, historically, B2B's been like, we don't have to do social media. We don't, you know, they've had their own set of rules. And now that rule book's gone out the window, because it's just people that buy for B2B are also buying on B2C for their personal things. So they used to a particular, they've been conditioned to a type of experience. And so, you know, there's no reason why B2B companies now can't look at, you know, and making the most of social commerce.
Great. Thank you very much, Luigi. I think we covered a lot as regards to the state of e-commerce in 2022. And we should cover more in the next episode.
Yeah. I mean, if you've got any questions around that, then please kind of drop us an email. info@thebig.commercepodcast.fm. I mean, I've enjoyed doing this again. I think as an agency, we do this day in, day out, and there's so many merchants out there that need help, and it's our duty, I believe, just to kind of help them navigate things, because things are getting more complex every day as well. So it's not going to get easier. Yes, the number of tools out there is helping, but it's becoming more competitive and much harder to make money in e-commerce. So we're here to help and here to answer any questions you've got.
All right. Thank you very much. Enjoyed this episode. Join you here in the next 2 weeks, and you can follow us on social media. We're very active on LinkedIn, Instagram, and you can also head over to our blog. We've got some really insightful pieces of information around e-commerce. See you later.
Thanks very much.